Together we will stand, fight and we'll fall. Come on now, people, let's get on the ball and work together. Come on, let's work together.
Working together in our community to rise to the challenge of a global pandemic. Something perhaps we never thought we would do, but look at us go, hey. 218-726-7181. If you have comments or questions, we'd like to hear from you this morning. Our first guest is Ted Hoffman. He's the branch director from the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Northland, the Lincoln Park branch. Hey, Ted, good morning. It's so great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So first we needed to realize that if you close schools, kids go hungry. And that was a hard one for people to realize. The Duluth School District stepped up to the plate and stepped in to kind of fill the gap. Now we have to realize that when schools are not in session, kids are still running the risk of going hungry. So what do we do? And this is where the Boys and Girls Club, along with some other organizations, Lincoln Park Middle School and Piedmont Elementary School, the Boys and Girls Club, the Salvation Army, are all really stepping up to the plate. Talk a little bit about who your kids are and how come they're hungry, Ted.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, everything's so day-to-day right now that, you know, we're all really trying to figure out our current day and the next day, and it's hard to look too far past that. And I think around, like, Wednesday or Thursday last week, a lot of community leaders at once sort of realized, wow, schools aren't going to be doing the breakfasts and lunches, which have been incredibly successful. And, you know, for some kids, it's just, you know, nice to go have that lunch opportunity. And for some kids, they're truly relying on that for their breakfast and their lunch. And that's, you know, the school is typically what's feeding them throughout the day. And then a lot of our kids, so our Lincoln Park site serves over 100 kids a day. We're usually feeding about 70 of them dinner, 60 to 70, while they're hanging out and programming. So a lot of those kids are going to school, having breakfast and lunch at school, coming to the club for a snack and dinner. So that's really, you know, their three meals and snacks in between for the day. So like I said last week, a group of community leaders kind of all realized, you know, this was going to be an additional issue of need as the schools aren't doing the breakfast and lunches, and really teamed up. So Equilibrium 3 organized grocery drop-offs yesterday. So kids were able to pick up a grocery bag that would sustain them for the whole week. It had Uncrustables and string cheese, carrots, chips, cookies, granola bars, soup, all stuff that kids could really easily prepare or just go ahead and eat. On top of that, we've been offering lunches in front of our site from 12 to 1 for kids in the Lincoln Park neighborhood. And then we have an additional five pop-up sites that we are offering lunch that kids can just come and get. For the last couple weeks, we've been doing snack and dinner out front of our club. But this week, we realized lunch was going to be a need, so we've added that to what we're doing as well.
How do you manage feeding a group of kids, 60 to 70 kids or 100 kids or whatever it turns out to be? How do you manage feeding a group of kids when you need to social distance at the same time? And, of course, today looks like it's going to be a beautiful day. Today is a day for a big picnic of 60, 70 people sitting 10 feet away from each other. But how do you manage feeding kids when, like, the rest of the week it looks like it's going to be rainy and drizzly and bleh?
Right. So 60 to 70 kids is what we were feeding while we were programming when we had 100 kids in our doors. So I would say we've been giving out, you know, around 30 dinners and lunches a day. And what we do, you know, similar to what you see a lot of places or restaurants, is we just have cones and signs stationed out promoting social distancing so that they're all 6 to 8 feet apart. And then we do what's called grab and go. So we'll disinfect the table, put the lunch on the table, and then we step back and the kid walks by, grabs it, and goes. And then the point is to have them take it home and eat it, you know, rather than be congregating and socializing at that time. But I think, you know, for so many of our club members, we're such a reliable source of information and a positive adult that's modeling how we're supposed to act. So I think it's actually really good that, you know, we can still have that minimal interaction with them and show them what's appropriate and help them really understand what you're supposed to be doing right now. Because, you know, some kids are fortunate and have parents that are showing them the right way, but unfortunately there's some that might not be. So that's great where we can step in and help out with that.
I'm curious about your staff people. How are they managing? You're dealing with a bunch of kids, and people who work with kids come to love their kids and feel like they're almost their kids. These kids are vulnerable, and so there's perhaps extra concern. How is your staff dealing with not being able to be with their kids the same way?
Well, we miss them, that's for sure. We're spending a lot of time with each other. Yeah, to be honest with you, it's hard. There's some kids we're concerned about, but we've developed a call tree to initially was our first response once the schools and the clubs closed. So just to check in with parents and make sure they knew what was going on and make sure they knew of resources that were aware to them. Actually, starting yesterday, we launched our own virtual programming so kids can still interact. We have, like, daily challenges and things they can do, you know, at home or while social distancing. And then we've set up in our website a virtual consent form to do Zoom calls. So we can get on a Zoom chat with our kids, similar to what they're doing with the teachers, still help with homework, still run programs, still answer questions, still see each other's faces. So
that'll
really give us a boost.
So, Ted, before I let you go, the community, of course, communities really want to step up and they really want to help. Do you have a need? The minute I saw that you mentioned you were offering virtual programming, it made me wonder, do all of these kids have access to reliable computers and reliable internet service? Or is there some kind of a need there that perhaps the community could help fill?
Yeah. We've been reaching out and asking, and you know, majority of kids do have access to internet and some device other than a phone, but certainly not all. I would say, you know, I know there's some internet places that are supposedly stepping up that people can get free internet during this time, because this is really, I think, a conversation about distance learning, even more so than what the club can offer, because the schools are going to be really diving deep into distance learning starting next week, and that's going to be a huge challenge for kids. I think some kids that even want to learn that way are going to struggle. I know personally for myself, I was always more successful in a classroom than doing any sort of online thing. So I think, you know, the school district has doled out all of their Chromebooks, and they would be the ones I would reach out to with any type of device.
We'll do a little bit of looking around so that we can make sure that we connect potential donors with potential recipients the best way that we can. Is there anything that your organization needs? Would donations of food be useful? I know donations of cash frequently help nonprofits stretch those dollars even further. What's the best way for people to help if they'd like to take part in this? Let's make sure all the kids get fed over spring break project.
Yeah. I mean, cash is always good, especially with, you know, grants are changing. Everyone's, you know, personal finances are different. So, like, our gala had to be postponed. That's usually one of our biggest fundraisers of the year. As far as the food goes, any type of non-perishable item could be dropped off at our Lincoln Park site. Also, hygiene products is great for these care packages that we're sending home. If we can get kids some soap and shampoo and a toothbrush and all that type of stuff, would be awesome.
Fantastic. Ted, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. It's always a great treat to talk with you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, take care.
Ted Hoffman joined us this morning as our guest. He is the branch director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Northland, the Lincoln Park branch.
We've got to get ourselves together. Take some time and talk it over.
We need to sit down right now and talk about
it. We've got to get ourselves together. Try and understand each other.
Try and understand one another.
The time has come, it's now or never.
It's now or never.
We must not wait until it's gone.
Gone,
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 gone, gone, gone.
The Staple Singers this morning on 103.3 KUMD. It is 10:10. There is a new organization here in the Northland that is trying to help another group of vulnerable folks get the help and assistance they need. If you have comments or questions, by the way, we're asking you, encouraging you to call in. It's not a membership drive. It's not really, really. It sounds like when we say 218-726-7181, but we just want your comments and your questions and maybe some stories about how your neighbors are helping one another in your neighborhood. Neighbors is a new program here on KUMD as we try to build a little bit more community as we go through this pandemic. Joining us on the phone this morning is Julia Johnson, and they are one of the founding organizers of this Queer Trans Mutual Aid Initiative. Julia, I realize that you are on short time this morning, so we won't keep you long, but tell us a little bit about this new grassroots mutual aid network in part, not completely, but in large part, to help LGBTQ people. Tell us about it.
Morning, Lisa. So the organization's called the Twin Ports Queer and Trans Community Care, and it started, we're following in the footsteps of our transcestors who are organizers like Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, who put together in New York the Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, or STAR. To demand services for homeless LGBT youth. Mutual aid has been a part of the queer and trans community for a long time. And we have seen local folks give their last dollars to help each other in hard times. So this isn't uncommon in our community, even outside of crisis like this. We're trying to help people. Marsha P. Johnson was a Black trans bisexual sex worker and activist. She's one of our transcestors here. She was a part of a lot of oppressed groups that we're trying to help. We're including folks who are undocumented, people of color, people who are chronically ill or disabled, elderly, or sex trafficking survivors as well. We wanted people to know that we're attempting to connect the community more broadly and let people know that they're supported and we're here for them. Even if they're missing our physical presence. So folks can volunteer with us. We have a website, twinportscommunity.wixsite.com/twinportscomcare with COMCARE.
And we'll get a link set up, too, so it'll be easy for folks to find that link so that they can take part. Julia, can you explain to people a little bit how folks that are already perhaps marginalized fall through the cracks when we have a situation like this? Why is it so necessary and important, just in addition for everybody having that sense of community, where whoever your community might be, everyone needs a sense of some kind of community of sorts, but why are some of these different people, like you mentioned, including perhaps the trans, the queer, the LGBTQ community, how are they left out of a community response to something like COVID-19?
Yeah, so some organizations, some folks do experience discrimination, trying to access resources or fear that, and so they don't try to attempt to reach out to different organizations. Some folks who are transitioning, they don't have up-to-date ID, so that's often a requirement, even at food shelves, to receive services, to have a current ID, so they aren't able to access things there. They're already, marginalized, so they might not have transportation. That's a huge need in our community. So they, aren't able to get to places to pick up food or supplies. So being already marginalized really sets people up to not be able to access things if they become available.
The conversation has been had on our airwaves before about how expensive it is to be poor. And a lot of things that many of us, I think, take for granted because we have a car, we have the financial ability to do some things, means that we can take advantage of some of those shortcuts. But if a trip to get medication, for example, you know, involves, you know, now maybe a cab or something instead of even trying to take the bus. These things can really get, they can begin to add up. So tell me a little bit about the volunteers that you're looking for. Who would you like to have volunteer, and what are the kinds of things that they'll be doing?
So we would like really anybody and everybody to volunteer, specifically people that are, you know, open to people from all walks of life and can serve them respectfully. We have volunteers assisting things with like preparing meals, running errands, emotional support, delivering medical supplies, helping with child care, and signing up for public programs like health insurance and unemployment, and hosting folks that are displaced right now. So, you know, we're also having volunteers offer donations like cash, gas and grocery cards and bus cards, things like that, that provide material, tangible support for people as well.
That's fantastic. Well, Julia, we will get, as I mentioned, some links set up on our website, so it'll be easy for folks to find the information about the program and also all of the information and where you sign up if you'd like to volunteer. Thank you so very much for taking a little time to join us this morning.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa.
Julia Johnson joined us this morning as our guest here on 103.3 KUMD. They are one of the founding organizers of the Queer Trans Mutual Aid Initiative. It is 1017, 218-726-7181, 218-726-7181. Do you have a comment or a question? How are you dealing with week two of being shut at home? How are you managing with your family? How are you managing with the kids? Kids, are your parents on your last nerve? Parents, are your kids on the last nerve? Or is everybody getting along really well? Have you found some good ways to manage? We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 218-726-7181. It is 10:18, and this is Neighbors on KUMD, a little program to help us build our sense of community. Who are the helpers? We're identifying some of the helpers, identifying some questions, issues that folks are having as we all fumble through this challenging time together. Somebody had said a while back, there had been some conversation a while back about, oh, wouldn't it be great, you know, are you keeping a journal? Are you writing down what's going on and how you're coping with it? I laugh at the idea of a journal because a lot of people are saying, I don't know what day it is. I don't know what date it is. The dates, the weekends, it's everything is all kind of blending together. It's probably still March. So it's been a little bit of challenging. However, there is a group, of course, in our community who are absolutely laser focused when something like this happens. They are just, and I mean this in the most loving, respectful way, geeking out over the opportunity to create a project and jump in and start pulling all of this information together. Amy Brown is an archivist at the UMD Library. She joins us this morning. Hey, Amy, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I bet you are just pumped about the idea of collecting all of this wonderful information with social media, with email, with the way that we communicate with each other. In a way, you know, you can save an email, you can do a screenshot or save text messages, you can save social media posts, you can even record Zoom meetings and this kind of thing. So as we navigate these complicated waters, the opportunity to save a lot of our communications is kind of right there. And from that standpoint, that must just absolutely thrill you as an archivist.
Yes. So we started this Northeastern Minnesota COVID-19 Community Archive Project, which is based at UMD. And part of why we started this is because the staff has been so impressed at how people in Duluth are providing mutual aid to each other and creatively responding to this. And in my work as an archivist, I get lots of questions, of course, about history all the time. And people are often looking for photographs and especially documentation of individuals' feelings and day-to-day experiences during times of disaster or war or great change, such as the 1918 fire and pandemic or World War II, for example. And I know that people will be asking about this in the future, whether it's 2 years from now or 100 years from now.
So this is a wonderful opportunity for folks to kind of share their experiences. In terms of your project, what you're working on right now, what kinds of things are you looking for?
It's open to almost anything. Again, it could be a paragraph of text that you wrote about how it's affecting your life, whether it's your business, for example. It could be photos of signs you created to inform your customers about social distancing, or that you're closed, or how you're providing service online. It could be videos about that, like you said, social media posts. It could be photos of masks you're making and the patterns you're using. It could be a drawing of, some people are doing some really interesting mapping where they're drawing a picture of quarantine life in their home or in their neighborhood. It could be a video of you performing a poem you wrote, or music, or a story for children. Again, we're interested in all kinds of things. You don't have to be a professional writer or artist. And again, they could be in all formats, all kinds of formats. Like I said, video, audio, images, except 3D objects. We can't accept those right now, but if people can take a picture of those. And I would say we also are getting things like photographs of children's chalk drawings saying, wash your hands, or someone's program from a church service that is online. So it's very open.
I'm curious about what you as an archivist and a human being who thinks about these things and who listens to these requests, what you might encourage people to do for themselves. Obviously, the kinds of things that you would enjoy having people submit, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But you know that your kids and your grandkids, especially if you're little kids, you know, you've got little kids that aren't really going to remember a lot about this,
right.
And you might want mm-hmm. to, and you're thinking, oh, it'd be kind of cool to document this somehow for them. What are you recommending that individuals do to kind of mm-hmm. mark this experience and save, you know, maybe not just the big things, but some of the day-to-day, like you're talking about, some of the day-to-day things mm-hmm. that are different and change? What can we do just as regular old people?
I think, for example, what are you eating now? You know, how are you dealing space-wise if you have more people in your home right now? How are you coping with anxiety or, you know, concerns about losing your job, or if you have someone who's ill in your family, or you are. But it could be as simple, you know, just talking about simple day-to-day things. How do you feel about what's on the news? What are you doing I guess, what are kids doing in their schoolwork now? It really could be almost anything. And I think a lot of it is also how are we connecting with others during this time? Because one thing that's important to me about this project is that I want to give, I think that, you know, in the past, a lot of times the things that were saved in archives were things that were created by people who had the most economic and political power in society. And while these are very valuable, they're never the whole story. And I want to give individuals the ability to communicate what they want to about their own experiences and have them saved in the public archives if they want. Or I would also encourage people also just to save them for their families or for the future, even, you know, if you don't necessarily want to contribute it to an archives, although, of course, I hope that people will. And I also, you know, I don't want to trivialize anyone's suffering. This is one of the heartbreaking things about this time, is that it's affecting people who are the most vulnerable and marginalized in our society much more severely, generally, than others. And that's, that's really sad.
And yet that is a way, if you're familiar with this, or if you are that mm-hmm. person or know that person, that is a way that you can really memorialize them, and you can really, you know, talk about the things that your grandma perhaps had survived,
right,
and the things that
mm-hmm.
she's experienced in her life. And now, she's ill, or maybe she's just at risk. And now, instead of being mm-hmm. able to have company, maybe she needs to be quarantined and everybody's quarantined and we can't go and see her. And that's, I can't mm-hmm. go and see my own mom right now. And the phone is okay, fine, but it's, it really is kind of heartbreaking. Amy, what are you hoping? How are you hoping that this archive of materials, are you hoping that that at some point this archive of materials could go on display or be kind of available in some kind of an exhibit to folks? As things come in, what are you doing with them?
For now, we are posting examples on the archive's Facebook and some on Instagram. But I hope that, I mean, of course, it depends on the volume, but I would like for them to be available in a digital repository someday. So, for example, someone could look up, could be someone's name, or it could be just, I want to see what's in the, you know, COVID-19 Community Archive Project. And there could definitely be online exhibits, you know, highlighting that. I think, you know, depending on how much we get, it may take a while to process everything, but we're sharing some examples as we get them. And we look forward to doing more of that.
I think that is really exciting, and I think it's a wonderful project. We will make sure that we get a link set up so that it'll be easy for folks to find out how they take part if they want to. So we will absolutely make sure that that goes up on our web post. And you have kindly asked for our KUMD's coverage of the COVID-19 crisis. And so all of that information, the photographs that we have, the documentation, we'll make sure that we get all of that to you as soon as we get a time to breathe. Yeah. And I'll probably share like a whiny note or something so that you have an idea about my feelings about the whole thing and how really, really pitiable I am and deserving of sympathy. So that'll be really super. I'm looking forward to that. Amy, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. It was wonderful to have you here. Really appreciate it. And again, we'll get the links to all of these great conversations up so that you can get information about the projects and the folks that we have talked to this morning. Amy, thanks again for being our guest.
Yes, thank you so much.
Amy Brown this morning is an archivist at the UMD Library and the Northeastern Minnesota COVID. What are they calling that again? It's the Northeastern Minnesota COVID-19 Community Archive Project. We get some links set up to that one, of course, so more information. 218-726-7181, 218-726-7181. We'd like to encourage you to give us a call in the last seconds or two of the program if you've got a question or a comment, something that you would like to ask. We'd like to hear from you this morning. Otherwise, join us on Thursday. Jot the number down, 218-726-7181. Jot down that number. Join us on Thursday morning at 10 o'clock for another edition of Neighbors. Maybe you'd like to share how you feel about this pandemic as you're going through this experience. Maybe you've got some questions. Maybe you figured something out about online meetings that just works like gangbusters, and you'd like to share it. We'd like to hear from you. 218-726-7181. This is Neighbors on KUMD.